Here's an exterior of the house before.
Okay.
I'd say this was probably taken in the early 1900s, maybe 1905 or 1906, before a railing was put on the porch. There is a railing.
Mm-hmm.
And later on there was a window put there at a landing on the steps.
This is before the stained glass window was put in?
Yes. Have you been in the house?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Very well. You know the window at the stair landing.
Right.
And that window hadn't been put in yet when this picture was taken.
Uh-huh.
And the Polinos added all of that shrubbery around the house, the pink dogwood.
Mm-hmm.
And so it looks pretty bare the way it was then and the present time. This is a view of the foyer as you go in from the front door.
Right. Uh-huh.
You can see the paneling, and that bench is still there. And this goes into what we call the library, where mm-hmm. the large fireplace is.
They kept the walls plain then?
Well, evidently so. It doesn't show up. Uh-huh. And this is one of the living rooms. We called that one of the front rooms the parlor, and the other one was the library. And I think this table was in the parlor, and this is looking into the library, and there was an outside door. I think maybe that was the outside door.
Mm-hmm.
And that large window that
right.
looks out on Buffalo Street. And
what time period did these date from, do you know, these two photographs?
Well, I'd say maybe 1906 to 1910. I remember mm-hmm. that lamp. It was a real delicate shade of pink, kind of. Mm-hmm. And here's another.
It's an oil lamp?
It probably, yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And later, I think it was electrified.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a picture of the third floor room.
Mm-hmm.
You can see where the ceiling slants.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the third floor is occupied.
Yeah, I've never been up there.
By Brooke. And it's very interesting. And ask her if you can go up there sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one unfinished room up there, a dark room. And after Dr. McClure took it over, he had two windows to match the original two windows that are in the other room, and made a nice little bedroom up there. So there's one real large room. This room runs clear across the front of the house.
And that's got wainscoting in there too, huh?
Yeah.
The wooden wainscoting.
And then there are two small bedrooms that her girls use, and then they put a bath in up there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to get an old bathtub with claw feet, as I remember, and an old wash basin. And so that fits in with the period of the house. Mm-hmm. Old fixtures of the bathroom.
Whose room was this at the time this picture was taken?
The youngest son. And his hobby was taking pictures and developing them himself. I've told you that one of the rooms wasn't finished. It was a dark room, and he used that dark room.
Literally was a dark room, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And he had many pictures, and he mounted them on the cardboard. I don't know what's happened to all of them, but that was his hobby.
The whole wall there is covered with them, looks like.
So ask Brooke sometime if you can go up and see that room.
Okay.
The architect, the way the eaves are and the windows, and they're two different sets of windows, and there's a window seat underneath each two windows.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
One set of windows, they look out on Buffalo Street, and the other set out on Sycamore Street.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this is some more of that third floor room. There's a closet up there.
He had pictures everywhere.
And, yes.
Tacked to the door.
And this is the dining room. If you've been in the house, you remember this.
Yeah, that's really a beautiful fixture there.
And somebody took the pulls off those doors and the latch there. That happened when the Polinas first got it. I don't know who was that. Oh, I think that's just like cutting off somebody's ears to take some hardware. Because when the Polinas were out there, I had a catalog of hardware and I found something similar to what this was originally. And I gave it to the Polinos and thought that they'd write off order it something to replace those pieces, but they didn't. Every time I'm out there, I think how terrible that is. And here's this table. I can remember that table. I don't know what happened to it. And this same lamp.
Where is that? That's in the parlor then?
Yes.
Okay. Let's look in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
And here's another one of the dining room. Shows that. And the table, and this is that built-in.
Yeah, the cupboard there.
And this is one of the bedrooms
on
the second floor. And that's another picture of the house without before the time of the railing around it. And without any shrubbery or what that dark is.
It's like part of a fence almost. That's really interesting to look through the porch there and just see the empty hillside across the street there on Sycamore. So these pictures were all taken in about the same time?
Yes, I'd say, and I think probably that son who had a hobby of taking pictures is the one who took these.
Looks like they had a lot of Oriental carpets on the rugs. Oriental rugs on the floor, These are some of the family members here.
And now, that's Emily Berry, who grew up over at the Gatehouse.
Oh, really?
Yes. Huh. And that is I and the baby Carrie. And that's my grandmother holding me up. This is the, you know where that enclosure is, a sunroom off the dining room.
In the back, right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. My grandmother's holding me up there on the ledge. That was my grandmother.
Mm-hmm. So how'd you get the nickname Woo?
Why, that's what I named myself. My name is Winifred, and I couldn't say that, and I call myself Woo. And my grandparents, I named my grandmother Dom and my grandfather Bop. And that name stuck with them. Even their own children picked up on those nicknames and called their mother and father Bop and Dom. And that's my grandmother again. That's me. Looks as though about the same age as here. And here's an early picture of the gatehouse.
Oh, that's really nice.
And of course, Emily Berry was living at the gatehouse. She was born there. Did you ever get acquainted with Emily Berry?
No, unfortunately, I never had the opportunity.
Well,
she was quite on in years before.
Yes,
I got
she
really
went
involved.
Downhill. How many years have you lived in Elkins?
About 10 years. But
well, that's about the time that her mind went. She was down at the nursing home for 3 or 4 years, maybe. And she wasn't improving any, and that's when Emily moved her back to the gatehouse. And then when Linda went over to the dye house, she moved Emily, and she died there.
This is when they still had the original color scheme on there, I guess, the the dark trim around the windows, yes, and the light colored shingles.
Uh-huh. And the archway was still there.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice that?
Yeah. When was that taken down? Was that when they put in the gym, or?
Oh, I guess so. They said that the reason it was taken down was because the big trucks hauling material up, mm-hmm, there couldn't get under it.
Mm-hmm.
And where it was ever taken, I don't know whether it was ever stored or cut up for
the junkyard
or what. But, and something, I've had a picture of it, but I don't know where it is. There was a walk right beside the driveway. The walk was over here, a curved, uh-huh, walk going up the hill.
Where the mounting stone is for a horseback?
Maybe there is there. But anyway, there was a turnstile there. In that, it wasn't a very wide enclosure. There was a wall here and a wall here, and then the walk, and there was a turnstile, isn't that right? And that was there for a long time. It was in my memory.
That was in between the pillar and the main stretch of the wall, then? The pillar that,
yes,
was supporting the ironwork?
Yes, the low wall.
Uh-huh.
It goes down Sycamore.
Do you remember the gate that was there?
Yes, I do, and they swung back. Mm-hmm. And I suppose when they wanted to make the entrance private, they closed those gates. But there were iron gates there at one time.
Oh, they were all iron?
Oh, yes, they were beautiful, heavy. Hmm. I suppose cast iron. Mm-hmm. They kept them.
Because part of the hinge of one is still there, and the one pillar.
Is there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was always wondering whether they were iron or wood, but they were.
Oh, no, they were iron.
That same ornate ironwork then.
Yes, that fitted in
forged
this
work.
Archway. Well, that's about all I can tell you about these pictures. This is a picture of my grandfather taken in front of that fireplace in the library.
Yeah, that's a nice portrait. Do you know when this date's from?
What date you're asking? Mm-hmm. 1939.
Okay.
And here's a picture of this is my brother Jim. He'd be a grandson of this gentleman. And there I am, and that's Emily Berry. And this is Tommy Green, who grew up in Elkins, up here on Terrace. He and my brother were close friends at the time, and they've remained good friends. They see each other once or twice a year. And Jim was courting the girl who became his wife, and he'd been told that she was over in the park with a group of young children. I don't know, she had charge of them or something. And Jim was pretending to be looking for Mary Willa over in the park, and somebody took this picture. I don't know who took it.
Got that far-off gaze there.
Yeah.
Huh? That's something.
But, oh, what I wanted to call your attention to, there were double doors here at the entrance.
Yeah, I saw that.
Uh-huh. And they were beautiful doors. And leaded glass. And the Polinas had those two doors taken out, and that solid door put in. And these doors had those lights there and let some daylight in.
Mm-hmm.
And now that vestibule is completely dark with that solid wooden door.
Was it just a question of taste, or was it something else?
Well, I don't know why. I asked Ora May. I was surprised when I realized how dark the vestibule was with that solid wooden door.
Mm-hmm.
And my question was, what did you do with the double doors that you took down? Because I knew they were good. I think they were cherry and with this leaded glass. And she said, Joe put them down in the basement. I don't know what happened to them. Just beautiful doors.
Wow.
And they fitted the house much more than that solid door that they put in.
Yeah, that glass works real distinctive.
Mm-hmm. I tell you, another door that matched those that's still there in the library, there's a door that goes out on the porch.
Okay.
And that door has leaded glass. And that was the same type of door as these double doors.
Mm-hmm.
So to make the house authentic again, I'd like to see those doors replaced. You can see the paneling, that insert there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Get an idea what those doors were like.
Well, now this building was built a while before your grandparents moved into it, wasn't it?
Yes, the guys came here in '03, I've been told, and the house had been built, but it wasn't completely finished.
Oh, really?
And a family by the name of Warfield, a man by the name of Warfield, had built it.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather bought it and finished it, and then later he did added to it what is the kitchen and the laundry room below the kitchen and the maid's room above. He added to the house.
Hmm.
The original kitchen is the room that we called the den, that's the windows look out on Sycamore.
Mm-hmm.
It's all oak paneling.
Mm-hmm. Behind the library.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the original kitchen.
Small kitchen for a house that size.
Well, that's a fairly good sized room. That fireplace, that mantle wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
And the toilet that is off that room was the pantry for the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And then the porch that is off the den was the back porch for the house.
Oh, okay.
And then the butler's pantry that you go into from that den room was right next to the kitchen. And the butler's pantry had a sink in it for washing vegetables or rinsing off dishes. It was for that purpose. And then the dining room. See, you came from the kitchen through the butler's pantry
right.
to the dining room.
Right. Uh-huh.
And my grandfather built on the new kitchen and the laundry room below and the maid's room and bath up above.
Mm-hmm. So they had several servants that lived there in the house?
Well, never more than one at a time.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And then he had that window put in at the landing on the steps. It was just a great big window, and he had it pushed out a little, and the stained glass
mm-hmm.
put in.
Do you know who he hadn't contracted to do that?
No, I don't. I remember when it was done. I know the workman who built all those cupboards in the kitchen was a Walter Triplett,
mm-hmm.
who was a cabinet maker here. But I don't know. I'm sure the glass came from out of town, and maybe somebody from out of town designed it, wherever the glass came from. I doubt if anybody in Elkins had that kind of skill then.
Hmm. Well, you were talking about the Warfield family that built it originally. What brought them to Elkins? Do you know anything about them?
I have an idea he was connected with the railroad, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There was a younger Warfield who lived down here on Guy Street. His daughter just died recently. She was Edna Warfield McNish. And that was the only child they had. And that Mr. Warfield was connected with the old Elkins National Bank.
Okay.
And I think the Warfield who built the house on the corner was maybe this Mr. Warfield's uncle, but I don't know. I don't think it was a father-son relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I have an idea that Mr. Warfield was with the railroad, but I don't know that to be a fact. I think I've showed you all these pictures I have.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all.
Yeah, those are some wonderful photographs there.
I've sent a lot of pictures on to my brother Jim, because he has two children and I don't have children. And that's my brother Jim. Mm-hmm. And that's his son and that's his daughter. She has a daughter, but except for her, that's the only one in the next generation.
Hmm. She's the one going
on my side. There are others, but in my particular branch.
I see.
Since I didn't have any children, and I had three brothers, and he's the only brother who had children.
Well, now, what brought your grandparents to Elkins originally?
My grandfather came here with the Colm Coke Railroad, and that was the railroad that Senator Elkins built from Elkins to Charleston. And it was a short line, and it was needed for the moving of coal and lumber. There were lots of coal mines between here and Charleston and lots of lumber mills. And did I say Senator Elkins? I meant to say Senator Davis.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me. Got a loaf of bread in the oven. Now, you were saying what brought my grandfather to Elkins. It was Senator Davis who built the Colm Coke Railroad. And I think he was in his upper 80s when he did. He was a remarkable old man to start something like to have a railroad built. And then the Colm Coke eventually just folded up after the coal and lumber was removed. Why then there wasn't any use for the railroad. They did run a passenger train one train each way. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it ran on Sundays or not, but anyway, there was passenger service between Elkins and Charleston for a few years. And some of the train stations, some of the towns along the railroad, they were named for the Elkins and Davis family. For instance, there's a Gassaway, West Virginia, and Henry Gassaway was Senator Davis's. Gassaway was his middle name, you know, Henry G. He's the man on the iron horse, you know.
Right, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And what are some more?
Well, now your grandfather, what was his role then in the Colm Coke operation?
He was the general, I think he had the title of being the general manager.
Oh, really?
Had an office here at Elkins, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So was the house then built for the Warfields because of their connection with the railroad? I mean, did the railroad act as sort of the...
Now, that I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I just wondered whether that was a parcel that was set aside by the railroad and then the Warfields bought it, or
maybe
it was...
Mr. Warfield might have bought the land from the Elkins, because the Elkins owned all the land. This, where the forestry building is, and where the Bill Gross home is, and where the gatehouse is, of course, and on back their way, almost to Gilman. There was something in one of these historical articles just recently about how much land the Elkins owned, and the city park where the park is. And well, it's known how much was in the Elkins estate, and Senator Elkins bought land from other people to add to his extensive holdings.
Mm-hmm. Well, so far as your growing up there is concerned, then, your grandparents had only been there for a few years when you came along, I guess.
Oh, yes, just 3 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My father and my mother came here at the age of three, was brought here from Garrett County, Maryland. and her father was connected with the Western Maryland Railroad that was already established. It was in here before the coal and coke. We don't hear much about the coal and coke anymore because it was short-lived.
Mm-hmm.
So
her parents came in here when Elkins first started up as a town then?
Or? Yes, they came here in the late 90s. In the late 1890s.
Mm-hmm. So then they were... Your parents met here in Elkins?
That's right.
In Elkins?
Yes. Uh-huh.
There's your buzzer again. I don't know if that's...
Oh, okay.
Okay, you were telling me the date that your mother came here.
Well, my mother's parents came to Elkins in 1892, and at that time my mother was 3 years old.
Okay.
And my father's parents came to Elkins in 1903.
Mm-hmm.
And they were married, and I was born in 1906.
Mm-hmm. So then after that point, you and your parents lived there in the house?
We lived at the Dye House part of the time, and then my father was employed in Parkersburg for a few years, and we lived in Parkersburg, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And came back here, and established a home, and my first brother was born, and then another brother, and another brother. And then my mother died, leaving four young children in 1918.
So that was in the influenza epidemic?
The flu epidemic in 18, yes.
That have a pretty dire effect on the community of Elkins at the
time?
Yes.
A druggist died, and every once in a while I hear somebody refer to the flu epidemic, and it was difficult to get a doctor, and people just didn't want to go into a home where there was a case of flu. Everybody was afraid of it. It was fatal. So many people died of it. A great many of the ones who had flu, they contracted pneumonia, and there was nothing to do for pneumonia back then. There were no antibiotics, and that's what killed a lot of people who had flu. They developed the pneumonia, and my mother was sick only 2 weeks and died, and that was the way with everybody. It was just like the Black Plague.
That's tough.
Well, it was a devastating disease. It was all over the United States.
So from the time that you were born pretty much until what point you lived there in the house? Off and on, yes.
And then after my mother died, I stayed with my grandparents after my father married again and continued to live there. And my grandmother died in 39 and my grandfather in 45. And I stayed on at the house to have the three sons wanted to have somebody living at the house, and then I stayed there. I was married in the meantime and until the house was sold in 45 or 46. My grandfather died in 44, and I think the house was sold in 46 to Sam Polino.
Mm-hmm. Well, you must have seen a lot of changes in that neighborhood in that
time.
Yes,
yes.
Was that the only house there, pretty much that part of the block?
Oh, it was the only house. And then Frank Weimer, the famous coach at the high school, built right next door. And then...
When was that about?
Okay. In the early 20s, maybe 1921.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't married yet when he started to build the house, and he and Eleanor Strebe were married that summer and moved into the house.
How about some of the other houses along that section of the block?
the John Mather built the next house where Mrs. Jimmy Polino lives. You know that house. Mm-hmm. And then the next house, a man with the Forestry Service built that, a light brick house. It's a very nice house. But he had a stroke and he needed to live on one floor, and they built out on Randolph Avenue. That home is now a real estate office. It's the corner of Randolph and Graham Street.
Okay.
Uh-huh. A one floor house. And then the McIntyre home, that one on the corner that an addition has been added just recently.
Mm-hmm.
And a lady who was in a wheelchair lived there, and she had a bedroom on the first floor, lived there with her daughter until she died. And then the daughter died and the house was sold. And I don't know who's living there now.
I think it's John Henning.
John who?
Henning, lawyer here in town, and Dr. Oh. Mary Boyd. They live in, that's their house.
Yes, and who's crippled that there's a ramp?
I don't think that
there
was anybody. Yeah, they put a ramp there. I think it's mainly for their daughter. They have a little girl just so she can get back and forth without fooling with the steps. But I don't know. There might be some other reason behind it, too.
Oh, I was sure that somebody must be crippled living there if they put that ramp there.
Not that I know of, but anyway.
It's very noticeable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know there. It's right in front of the house.
And a lawyer by the name of Henning, you say, Lucy?
Henning. Mm-hmm.
Henning.
Yeah.
I've seen the name in the paper, but I don't know them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, they've done nice things to the house, but I just wondered about the ramp.
Yeah, the addition on there matches real well with the original building. It's real nice.
I thought maybe an older person might be living there.
I don't know. Not that I know of, but could be. I don't know. Then across the street, there's a real distinctive house, too.
Yes, the Williams house. A man by the name of Charlie Earle built that house. It's always been an attractive house. And I guess he died and his wife moved. And Phil Williams bought it. And they reared two children there, and their son was killed in World War II. Very sad death, of course. All war deaths were sad ones. And they extended it. They added on in the back and made it larger. It's been well taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And then those apartments down there, that was the site for the Barnard home where my husband grew up.
Hmm.
And his father died, and then his mother, and there wasn't anybody to live there anymore, so the property was sold to Paul Joseph. He wanted to build a home and decided not to build there. And then he sold it to Fletcher to build those two apartment units.
Oh, I see. So they took down the house that was there originally and
yes,
built
it. Yes, it was an old house. It had been built about the turn of the century.
Mm-hmm. So I bet you've seen a lot of changes behind that
yes,
house, too,
I
there,
have.
So far as the forestry building being put in.
Yes,
you recall
I watched
that?
It go up.
What was back there before? Just an open field, pretty much? Or?
A field, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, just a great big field. And there was a little creek that ran diagonally. That came, I guess it was Buffalo Creek,
mm-hmm.
that came from Harpertown, and it was just an open creek, and then a culvert was put over, it was enclosed.
Hmm.
And then later the forestry building was built, but diagonally through that lot is a covered up creek.
Hmm. So I bet there's a lot of activity once that building got underway.
Yes, people came to watch it go up, and I remember the pile drivers that drove the big piles in the ground, and It was something new for me to see.
Yeah, I can imagine. Must have been quite an operation.
Mm-hmm. Because it is a fine building.
When did the Grosses build then? When was that? I guess they acquired that property from the Elkins heirs.
Yes, uh-huh. And John Brown home on out the road.
Mm-hmm.
I date things from World War II. I'd say that was built in the late 30s,
mm-hmm.
the Gross home. And at one time, starting there, about where the gatehouse is, there was a boardwalk. Of course, it was just a dirt road out Harpertown way, and people couldn't walk in the road, and a boardwalk was made on the Elkins side of the road, clear out to the top of Harpertown Hill, as far as the Elkins property went. A boardwalk was built and maintained, I think, by the Elkins family for people to walk on who lived out along the Harpertown Road. And in some places, the bank was high above the road, and this boardwalk was way up high, and the road way down there, I remember.
When was that there?
Oh, my. I'd say till the 20s sometime. I remember two young boys. They were sons of a friend of mine. And it was on a Sunday morning, and they were walking, they were balancing themselves on something on this boardwalk, and they were dressed up in their Sunday best clothes, two little boys, I suppose they were like 6 and 8 years old, and they were so cute walking this, maybe it was a fence rail above the boardwalk, and they were balancing themselves in their pretty white Sunday suits on their way home out there. I remember that. So I'd say that boardwalk was there until the road was paved, maybe in the late 20s, early 30s.
Hmm. I've been pretty distinctive.
And that road going out past Harpertown, there's an area out there called Cravensdale.
Right.
And it was just wide enough for one vehicle. That road was paved, and what we call the Seneca Pike, you turn left before the Kump property. And that road was paved for a short distance out there. And that's where you went for an automobile ride. We had two paved roads. We went out past Harpertown to the end of the Cravensdale Road and turned around. And then we went out the Seneca Road 2 or 3 miles and turned around and came back. And those were the only two paved roads we had in the early 20s.
Now, was Sycamore Street paved? Or was it kept dirt pretty much?
Oh, it was dirt for a long time.
Yeah.
Elkins didn't have any paved streets. You walked across on stepping stones at the intersections, and everybody had muddy shoes back then. He wore overshoes in the wintertime. Mm-hmm.
Now, the streets in the center of town were paved with brick.
Yes, uh-huh.
But Sycamore Street, Buffalo, they were just far enough out so that they were dirt then.
Yes, and Sycamore had what we call a cinder path. About once a year, a new load of cinders put on, and maybe they were crushed a little bit until they got worn down, and it was easy walking, and you didn't get the grit in your shoes. And, you don't know what Elkins was in the old days.
Well, what was City Park like back when you were growing up? I imagine you spent a little bit of time there.
Yes, to walk through it, but there wasn't any playground then. A small pavilion was there, but not like the pavilion is now. And the paths in the park were of tan bark from the tannery. And it was very damp. There were more trees then and lots of shade. And they didn't keep it mowed as is now. There wasn't so much grass. And the leaves that fell in the fall, they weren't raked up and carried off. And, the park is a great improvement to what it was.
It's pretty much as wild then, I guess, huh?
Yes. But there would be a celebration, I think, on the 4th of July. I can remember when the band would play over there. And on the 4th of July night, it was always at the time that the Elkins family would be having a house party. They'd have guests from Washington or places in the East. And they'd set off fireworks up on the lawn in front of Hallihurst. And the Elkins people knew that this was a yearly custom, the night of the 4th of July. And the Elkins people would line up along the stone wall and see the fireworks, the skyrockets, and what they call those big things that burst, aren't they skyrockets?
That must have been some time.
Oh, yes, the 4th of July was looked forward to.
Did that about every year then, huh?
Oh, yes, as long as the Elkins were there and they put off the fireworks for the entertainment of their house guests and the Elkins people. Townspeople.
Well, now you mentioned the Berries living there in the gatehouse. Who lived over in the little house a little bit further on up the loop road through Hallihurst, the estate?
Yes, that house. When Mr. Berry was the caretaker for the Elkins. He had charge of the whole estate, had charge of the other people who worked there. They had a dairy barn and a dairyman who milked the cows, and then they had sheep and they had ducks. There was a pond, they had a duck pond, and they had an ice pond, and they let the ice, it was way back there, in the vicinity where the baseball field is, way back on the campus.
Long Cravens Run.
Right. And there was what they called the ice pond back there, and they let the ice freeze. And then when it got so deep, the men would cut it and take it in a wagon up to the ice house, you know, that's near Hallihurst. And of course it wasn't fit for putting in water to chill water, but they could put it in those old-fashioned refrigerators to cool the milk and vegetables and butter and so on. So they cut their own ice on the ice pond and stored it in that ice house. And I've heard that the walls of that ice house are so thick with sawdust in. Isn't it sawdust they put between the?
I pack that in. So there was another family then that was living in that small house? Or?
Oh, up there, yes. The Berries lived there for a while. And then the present gatehouse was built. I've heard Mrs. Berry say, that's Emily's mother, that when she lived up in the little house, that she could look down to where my husband's mother lived, to the Barnard house. And the Barnard house was where the Fletcher apartments are now. That she had a clear view, I guess, when the leaves were off the trees, that she could look from that little house up there down to the Barnard house.
Yeah, pretty sparsely built up in those days, huh?
Well, there wasn't anything between. The gatehouse hadn't been built, and the dye house hadn't been built, I guess. Emily was born in 1900, and she was the youngest of several children. Some of them died. And Emily had two older brothers who lived, and they would have been born back in the 1880s, I guess.
So they lived in that small house before the gatehouse was constructed.
There's some similarity in those two houses. They both have a curved stairway. And, well, if you're in them, you can see some similarity. The one on up there has been changed a little bit. I was in it after they'd made some improvements. I think Barbara Carter had something to do with the suggestions for changing that, and it was very attractive when I was in it a few years ago. I don't know how it is now or what it's used for.
Well, it's being used by the college. Actually, it's office space now.
Currently. Just office space?
Yeah.
I know Barbara's office was in there at one time. Do you know Barbara?
Right. Mm-hmm. In admissions.
Yes.
After the Berrys moved to the gatehouse, there was another family that lived in that one, or?
It was rented. I remember some families who lived in it. A D&E professor, Harry Wetzel, and his wife lived in it at one time. He's still living and quite ill. He's in the hospital, I understand. He's 90-something, I think. And he taught at D&E, and he and his wife lived there for a while.
Hmm. Do you remember the other families that lived down Buffalo at that time?
On Buffalo Street.
Right in the teens and 20s and so forth.
Well, they aren't around now. I remember some of them there, but...
Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They wouldn't mean anything to you. Emily Wilmoth Opal, she became a assistant superintendent of schools here. She taught in the Elkins schools for a long time. She lived down in the corner of Earl and Buffalo. And